Thinking about full-time RV living? We're breaking down the pros and cons from stationary setups to nomadic life on the move. Avoid budget pitfalls, decide if a home base is right for you, and learn how to stay prepared for emergencies. Plus, the latest RV news and an RV pro tip you won't want to miss. Welcome to the Restless Nomads, the ultimate RV show for modern-day rubber tramps and weekend warriors alike. Whether you're chasing sunsets full-time, savoring seasonal escapes, or just hitting the road for a quick weekend getaway, this is your go-to show for tips, tricks, and tales from the road. Join us as we dive into everything RV, choosing the right rig, surviving life on wheels, and navigating the highs and lows of life on the move. From towables to motorhomes, budget hacks to campsite secrets, we've got you covered. So buckle up, nomads, and let's hit the road to adventure, 1 mile at a time. Well, thanks for joining us again on another episode of The Restless Nomads. Check us out online at therestlessnomads.com. That's therestlessnomads.com. Let's jump right into some RV news. Here's your RV news update. Well, National Park campgrounds are seeing record bookings this year. The spring and summer travel season is quickly approaching, and popular national parks are already fully booked well in advance. So if you're planning on visiting Yellowstone or Yosemite or Glacier this year, you better get on it, but you might be relying on waiting for those cancellations maybe next year. Also, a new tax law could affect full-timers. A proposed nomad tax in some states aims to impose property-style taxes on long-term RV dwellers who don't maintain a permanent residence. Man, every good thing that comes along, the government has to step in and try to ruin it, don't they? The details are still unfolding, but full-timers should keep an eye out for these legal changes. I sure hope they don't do something that foolish. That's really inhibiting your freedom. Also, lithium battery prices are dropping. That's good news for us RVers. You know, lithium battery prices were out of reach for most folks even 10 years ago. But now, they've fallen 20% this year. So that's making solar-powered and off-grid camping more affordable than ever. There's your RV news. Let's jump into today's topic. So today we're talking about the many flavors of full-time RVing and also the pros and cons of full-time RVing. So if you're thinking about full-time RVing, you know, there's so many YouTube channels that paint this as just this glamorous, wonderful, adventurous, luxurious lifestyle. And it has its upsides, but there are some downsides too. Now, there are a couple different types of full-time RVers. There's the stationary full-timers. Usually, these are folks that just can't afford a sticks and bricks house or something like that. Maybe they're on Social Security or that kind of thing. You see this a lot where someone buys an RV and they put it in a park and they live in that RV, but it never moves. It just stays right there. It doesn't matter if the tires go flat. No big deal because they ain't ever moving it, right? So essentially, it's just like living in a mobile home park with a smaller mobile home. It ain't moving, right? Can be a good idea if you need to downsize in space and in budget, although RV parks per month are going up. For example, we stayed at one that had a monthly rate of $275 about 10 years ago, and I think it's over $600 nowadays. So just be aware of that. Still cheaper than renting an apartment, but that's a lot of money for a parking space and an electrical connection, if you ask me. Good for folks that are trying to save money and they still need to be near work, family, medical care, that kind of thing. That can come with some challenges. You know, if you have surgery or something, moving around in a small space like that can be good or can be bad, depending on the situation. Some people do it just because they like the simplicity of RV living without the constant movement. Here's a couple of the downsides. Some campgrounds limit long-term stays, and you may end up paying high monthly rent without ever really traveling. Most RV parks offer a monthly rate, and those are the ones that you want to seek out. Another downside to this, which is kind of dumb in my opinion, sometimes the RV parks will have age limits for the RVs. Most of them require the RVIA sticker on the side, so you can't bring a school bus or a converted cargo trailer or something like that. And a lot of them have gone to where your RV must be 10 years old or newer, which that can be a serious challenge if you're operating on a budget in the first place and you buy a little bit older RV. You know, there are several RVs that are 20 years old that look great and everything works in them, but some of these parks require 10 years or newer, which I think is kind of bananas. I mean, it's an RV park. Get over yourself, right? Okay, second type of full-timer is the more traditional and the kind that you see on YouTube all over the place. That's the nomadic full-timer. It's a little bit more adventurous and I would just say entertaining because you're seeing new places, you're traveling. It's the true wanderers, RVers who rarely stay in one place for too long. They move from state parks to BLM land to campgrounds to truck stops to RV parks to you name it, right? And everybody has their own preferences. Now, one of the biggest pros is that you can pretty much go wherever you want. So if you don't like where you're at, you can pick up and move and you're somewhere new and you're constantly exploring new places. It can be affordable if you do it correctly, but it is more than likely going to cost you more than if you were to stay stationary in an RV park or something like that. Now, some people, depending on how much you travel, really affects what you should budget for this, right? Some people will travel to a place and they'll stay for 2 or 3 months, or they'll stay for a couple weeks, and that can help as far as affordability goes. If you stay a little bit longer, and it also gives you a little more time to be able to explore. And travel days are just stressful. So putting a little bit of distance between you, between your travel days can help out and make it more fun. You just kind of have to determine by experience and also how much you want to pay for gas, how often you want to move. My wife and I have found that about 1 week is our sweet spot. We can stay in a place for about a week and then we want to move on. Some people stay for a month. Some people stay for a couple weeks. Some people stay for a season. Just depends. For us, we start getting kind of antsy after about a week and we want to move on. Now, if you're a full-time RVer, and you don't have a permanent home base, there are some things that you have to think about. There's some risks that come along with that adventure. So let's say that you're a full-time RVer and you sold your home. Well, if you get into an accident or your truck breaks down, you need to have a plan because you don't have any safety net there. Now, there are some things that you can do to kind of mitigate these risks if you're full-time and you have no backup place to go. First and foremost, have good insurance. In fact, you can buy insurance that is kind of catered towards full-timing so that if something happens to your RV, your insurance company will actually pay for a hotel for a certain amount of nights or even a rental car should you need that while your RV is in the shop getting fixed. So good insurance is a must. If you're full-time, you want to have the most protection you can get. Also, on the topic of insurance, make sure that you have comprehensive insurance. That way, when your truck is disconnected from the trailer, if you have a towed rig, or if your motorhome is parked with the engine off in a campground and a tree falls on it or something like that, you're covered. You want to be combing your policy, making sure that you're covered for every instance that you can, and if you're not covered by something, ask what it would cost to get it covered. Because, like I said, you want the maximum coverage you can get And typically RV insurance is not that expensive. Now, that brings me to this. So your automobile insurance, like let's say you get automobile insurance for your truck, usually covers the trailer while you're in tow. The same goes for a motorhome. If you have automobile insurance on a motorhome and you wreck the motorhome, then you're usually covered. Now, if you're at a campground and you forget to chalk the wheels and the motorhome rolls off the cliff, but the engine's off, your insurance is going to try to weasel out of that. So just be aware of that. And there are most of the time you buy specific policies that cover the RV when it's not in motion. So things to think about there, and always a good idea to have as much protection to give yourself some peace of mind. And also, you know, if you break down and you have to take it to the shop, you have some options there that you won't be coming out of your pocket. I've got two more items here for some added peace of mind. So another thing you want to have is an emergency fund. And you usually want to have enough in this, like if something catastrophic happens, let's say your engine throws a rod or something, you can cover the cost of that because insurance won't be covering that, right? They may cover the cost of the hotel and the rental car while the truck's in the shop or your motorhome's in the shop getting fixed. But you want to have enough to cover that. It's a good idea to have that saved up before you even set out. And as you move down the road, this should be separate from your maintenance fund. But when you have to use it, you need to immediately start building that back up if you can. Okay, so emergency fund, maintenance fund, big two. And then you can save a ton of headache and money if you start learning how to fix little things on your RV by yourself. When you take it to the shop, you're going to have to pay labor. That's really expensive. I think on average about $200 an hour. It's crazy. And you have to wait for them to fix it, which usually means that you have to wait for them to order parts and everything else. It's a real pain in the butt. Whereas if you learn how to do it, you can fix it on some sweat equity, no paying for labor, just the cost of parts. And usually when you set out to fix something that breaks, and things will break in an RV, they always do. It, no matter what RV you get, you're going to have things that break. It's the nature of the beast. Learning how to fix those things usually teaches you more about other systems in that RV, where when the next problem arises, you'll be better equipped to address it. YouTube University is the best place for learning how to fix problems with your RV, in my experience. Also, join a bunch of the Facebook groups for your RV specifically, your make and model, and you will oftentimes find problems that other people are having that have preventative measures that you can take right now to avoid those problems, or just have them in mind and know what to do should they arise. Okay, we'll look more into that further on down the line here. Then we have hybrid full-timers, and my wife and I have made our way to this. We did full-time RVing for a whole year when we were looking for a house, and then we bought a house. Now we're hybrid, and I don't even know if you'd consider us full-timers necessarily right now, but we have periods where we go full-time. So we'll go for extended trips. Some RVers own a home. Some of them even have an RV lot that they own. You can actually buy an RV lot. The last time I looked around at them, they were going for about $40,000. Depending on the area, it'll be higher or lower. But you actually buy that little bit of property. It can be a site that you buy in a park, or you can buy property and install hookups on that property and an RV pad. And then it's yours. So you always have a place to bring the RV back to. Now, that doesn't really solve the problem if your RV catches on fire. Where do you go, right? So have that in mind. But it's a good idea, if you can afford it, to have a place to kind of retreat to in case your RV breaks down or your truck breaks down. A lot of people, my wife and I included, rent out a portion, like a guest bedroom or something like that, of their home when you're on the road for an extended period of time. And that can help cover some of the costs of owning the home and having the electricity on and the gas and the garbage service and all that. You know, if you're just shelling out money for those services but not really using them, that can be kind of frustrating. So maybe consider renting it out to a traveling nurse or something like that. We prefer the short-term rentals. They're only there for 6 weeks or so, and then they're moving on. That way, when we come home, if they're still there, we don't have long to wait before they leave. But that's kind of one of the ways that you can enjoy the best of both worlds. Having a home base makes full-time RVing feel a lot less risky, because if anything happens, let's say you're down in Arizona and your truck breaks down or your RV catches on fire, worst case scenario, you jump on a Greyhound or on the Amtrak or on an airplane and come home, and you have a place to lay your head that night, which is pretty nice. So those are things to consider. Well, hey, let's go to a break. We'll get into some more challenges of full-time RVing just after the break, and also your RV pro tip on the way right here on the Restless Nomads radio show.